Good afternoon. This is Lorelei Kay. I am the pastor of Westminster Presbyterian Church, and this is the next segment of our radio program, How Then Shall We Live? My guest today is Tyann Benally. She is working with the Conservation Voters of New Mexico Education Fund, and her name came to my attention as one of the people who is helping to organize the McKinley County Blue Ribbon Uranium Task Force. Good afternoon, Tyann. How are you doing?
Hi. How are you?
Very good. I just gave a little brief introduction. Is there anything else that you would like to add so our hearers can know you a little bit better?
Sure. So I'll do my Navajo Diné introduction.
Thank
you. Hello, everyone. My name is Tyann Benally, and I just pretty much gave my introduction in traditional, you know, Navajo Diné way. My family's from the Four Corners of the San Juan County area. Although we moved here being Albuquerque when I was about seven, but I've been everywhere, literally, all over, and but no place like home. I really enjoy Albuquerque, but also I work for the Conservation of Voters New Mexico Education Fund. I am their campaigns director.
That's cool.
I'm here to talk about, you know, what we do. And I was pretty much, I've been here since last September of 2018, and I'm really excited. I oversee three current programs right now, one of them being Western New Mexico out of Gallup, and working currently on uranium legacy work. And that is why I'm here. So thank you very much. I'm really glad to, you know, be on the show right now.
Oh, we're really glad that you're here with us. I was intrigued to find out about your work with the uranium task force that we're trying to establish here for McKinley County. Our church had done a study on the doctrine of discovery with Mark Charles a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things that we did in that study was to go out to the uranium spill site that is northeast of Gallup and at the Redwater Pond. And so I learned a lot more about uranium in this area and its effects in this area. I wondered if you would share with us a little bit about the work that you're doing in that regard and how you got involved with it.
Yes. So here at Conservation Voters New Mexico, really we are here to value responsible stewardship of our water, our land, and our natural resources. And we believe that ecological health and social equity among New Mexico's diverse and culturally rich communities protect our cherished quality of life.
Mm.
And it's really important because here the work that we do, you know, we're working not just in Western New Mexico, but all throughout New Mexico, and what we call them are resilient communities. Yes, they're diverse, being, you know, a makeup of indigenous, Hispanic roots. We do pretty much resilient work, resiliency out there in Western New Mexico. And how I came about it, I've mostly worked 15 years in tribal work, whether it be policy, outreach, and engagement, and working closely just with different tribes out throughout the United States. I've worked with different tribes, but me being Diné, this is where it really hits closely.
Mm-hmm.
I've always, you know, been into environment work, and people always ask, how did you get here? And it basically was a natural progression of how I fell into environmental work. But I've always been really passionate, and I've always been into environment and, you know, conservation. And, you know, my family are really rooted in environmental work, and then also them being also biologists as well. So it's always it feels like it's kind of been innate.
Yeah.
And so it's like when I tell people, I feel like it's just been a natural progression of how I got here doing this work. But I feel really excited to be doing this work, not only with Indigenous, but for all different resilient communities throughout, you know, the state of New Mexico.
Yes. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you mean when you say resiliency work?
Yeah, when I say resiliency work, you know, Indigenous peoples have been here 500 plus years, right? Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of atrocities, a lot of traumas, you know, and right now we're in that process of, you know, going towards healing. And I really believe that we need to really heal our own communities and heal ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's something I know that's a lot of work that's being done in different tribes, you know, across the U.S. You know, they say that we're resilient is because, you know, people say that Natives, Indigenous were long gone a long time ago, but no, we're still here, right?
Absolutely.
We're still standing, especially despite all the atrocities, whether it be also, you know, social, environmental. We've had a lot of, especially here in New Mexico, there's a lot of environmental, you know, traumas and atrocities that communities have had, mm-hmm. in Western New Mexico being one of them,
right.
With uranium. And you spoke about, you know, your Redwater Pond work. And out in Redwater Pond, we see that, you know, there's certain areas where they can't drink their own water.
Right.
That in itself is pretty traumatic. And then also we're seeing, like, high rates of cancer, yeah. in these communities. And I can give an example of my community up in San Juan County. They have high asthma rates, high cancer rates, because studies show that, you know, when communities are closer to oil and gas developments or any type of, you know, uranium or even type of mining,
right.
they're mostly likely to be more impacted with these health inequalities and health issues, such as higher asthma rates and so forth. So, you know, with resiliency, it's basically those who really, you know, the definition is basically for those that who recover quickly from any type of difficulties and toughness or anything that's been, you know, in crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Native Indigenous communities have, you know, long always had to endure, you know, so many atrocities with the, you know, U.S. government and so forth. And so doing this work is really meaningful. To be working with these, you know, with the Indigenous communities, I myself, and it's just, you know, a wonderful thing to be working in these communities,
yeah.
of that, you know, with all they've been through,
right.
like, we're still going.
That's one of the things that struck me so much when we took our trip out to the Redwater Pond area and spoke with some of the folks who live there, that they are advocating for themselves in a place where the companies that came in and mined and took the uranium and got the benefit of all of the economic part of that walked away and left the land poisoned. And so the people who are there are suffering from that, but they're also not just sitting there waiting for somebody to come around and fix this. They're reaching out and advocating for themselves. So groups like yours can be an active part of helping them do that.
Right, exactly. And that's what, you know, what we're doing when it comes to, you know, when I say resiliency work and working with resilient communities is what we really do is connecting people with their political power, mm-hmm. as well.
So you're working then with the Indigenous peoples through the chapter houses. And are there other ways that you connect to environmental groups that can help to promote that resiliency?
Yeah, so currently out in Western New Mexico, we're working closely with chapter houses in the McKinley County. And we have done some work, and we're going to continue to do some work out in Acoma, Pueblo, and Laguna.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've done some work out there when it comes to, you know, working with environmental, you know, mining issues as well. Because
yeah.
There's a lot of mining issues in the Laguna, Acoma area. So really, pretty much, this is really trying to amplify, you know, community voices and really try to, you know, provide leadership.
Yeah.
So give them those skills.
So is,
you know,
that part of what you're hoping to do with the McKinley County Blue Ribbon Uranium Task Force?
Yes, yes. We're trying to influence, you know, with the county commission. It's taken close to 5 years for us to get here. And I don't take, you know, all the work. We had a, because I've been doing this work with the Western New Mexico since September, but we had a CVNM director, Talia Boyd, who, you know, was before me, who did a lot of work when it came around the getting the county task force together. And it's taken about 5 years now. And since we're finally here, it's something that we can all let go.
Mm.
So we're going to continue to, you know, move forward, and we're really excited. We're looking at June 24th of, you know, going to the county commission and pretty much introducing that we do want a task force, the McKinley Blue Ribbon Task Force, and we want that, you know, to come through a study. Okay. So we want to do a study around uranium, because I don't believe there's nothing has been done around that. So, and the health impacts around, you know, the study.
That's pretty shocking that they haven't done any studies on that. So that would be good to have that information.
And then, well, the interesting thing, too, about it, the work that I do, is I pretty much connect also with our other programs here. So overseeing three different current programs right now, Juntos program, which is out of Bernalillo County. We really work closely with communities in the South Valley of Albuquerque. Mm-hmm. And what our campaign is really trying to transition fossil fuel school buses to electric school buses. So we recently, well, the state of New Mexico really recently received some Volkswagen settlement funds. Mm-hmm. And so through those funds, we hope to, you know, hopefully that we can influence, you know, the Albuquerque School District to really transition to electric school buses, because we see high asthma rates in this area. Yeah. And then our Northern New Mexico campaign, Rio Riba County specifically, is focused on clean energy. And so what we're doing right now is really trying to get, you know, the community on board with clean energy and clean renewable. So we have campaigns issue-based all throughout the state of New Mexico. But the unique thing about what the work that we are doing currently, and it connects to Western New Mexico, is because we are doing a health impact assessment.
Yeah.
And that health impact assessment is looking at high asthma rates. Mm. So asthma rates for, you know, for those children who take school buses.
Yeah.
And so basically we're connecting all the different programs to really collect data, and so that we have some data that, you know, involves like asthma rates and whatnot. And the reason why I bring that up is because, you know, we see these health inequities in these communities, and the more data that we have,
yeah,
hopefully that, you know, that will also influence and guide our decision makers and our public policies.
Right. Because it's not just a comment, it's data, it's information, it's factual.
Exactly. Yeah. It's data and it's factual,
so
right?
They can't ignore it.
Exactly. And I believe that's why the study out in, you know, McKinley County, when it comes to, you know, the uranium and the effects that it has on the communities and the water, mm-hmm, and the quality of life, that is going to really, you know, help guide, like I said, our decision makers and our public policies.
Yes. I think it sounds like the kind of thing that will move things forward, hopefully.
Yeah, but then also, too, what's unique in the communities and out in our, you know, programs out in the Western North and here in Albuquerque, what we do is we have volunteers, mm-hmm, that are in those communities, and we try to, you know, recruit volunteers. And those volunteers could be advocates and leaders for their own voices. And hopefully that, you know, we train them, you know, with the get out the vote skills, such as, you know, how to write a letter to the editor, right?
Right.
How do you hold an official accountable, you know? And pretty much we really try to connect them with their political power when it comes to protecting our air, land, and water.
So communication skills, leadership skills.
Yeah, leadership skills, communication skills, and
community organizing.
Yes, basically it's community organizing. And what's unique is, it's really important, especially in rural areas, right?
Yeah.
Because in rural areas, you know, they feel like they don't have a voice, mm-hmm, or they cannot be connected. But I think it's really important. Some rural areas don't have really access to, you know, computers or technology. So it's like, well, why don't we have the programming there in place? And we have organizers on the ground doing grassroots work.
That's great. That's got to be a good feeling that you're involved with that kind of work.
It's like making it accessible, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, you're making it accessible for the community, and you're going out and you're bringing the information to them. And, you know, they will take that. You know, our goal is that they would take that information and use it during, like, legislation or, you know, times like confronting the county commission. So that's what's really unique, and it's pretty, you know, it's powerful work, and I feel really fortunate with the work that I'm doing, you know, along with my team.
As an Indigenous person yourself, that must be a really important part of your life then, to be able to offer those skills and training and things for the people who are coming out along with you into leadership.
Right, exactly. And, you know, my hope is, too, that, you know, we're always, you know, advancing our, you know, people of color and, you know, our Indigenous communities, is really uplifting them, you know, especially those who are from, you know, poor, you know, communities and, you know, impoverished, such as, you know, we have a high rate of, you know, unemployment, you know, on the Diné Nation and in different pueblos. And so, you know, to really bring them the resources is really powerful, because it connects them, and to have it accessible and to have it right there, instead of them having to go far, or like I mentioned, some don't have access to computer, either, you know, internet, or some places don't have electricity, right?
Right. And even just simply getting around on the reservations can be difficult because of the lack of roadways and things.
Exactly.
So then when you're working with the folks in the communities, what are some of the things that they're responding to in their lives? That, I mean, we have the uranium, but are there other environmental issues that we need to pay attention to?
So yes, I could speak to that. Even on a personal level, you know, the San Juan County, you know, we currently have the coal plant up there that's going to be closing. And my family's from the San Juan County community, and they're pretty much dependent on oil royalties. My dad has 160 acres up there, and ever since I was little, we've always got, you know, a check from the government for oil royalties.
Right.
So it's unfortunate that I would say the portion of my family, you know, are impoverished, and they do depend on that check.
Yeah.
And so I can see both sides of, you know, the impacts that it does have, the oil and gas industry, such as, you know, polluting, you know, air, respiratory issues come with that as well, water contamination. And then also most recently you hear about frequent earthquakes happening in, you know, oil and gas country.
As a result of the fracking that they're doing.
Right, exactly, and the fracking. And then also not just that, but the cultural side of it. You know, there's sacred areas that should not be touched, you know. For instance, the Chaco Canyon area, that's very sacred.
Yeah.
You know, and they're really trying to, you know, frack in that area. But, you know, there's like cultural side of it. There's health impacts. Mm-hmm. There's just so much complexity to it. However, I could see both sides, even though I'm pro, close the plant, right?
Right.
And mining. But I could see the other side of it with the economic repercussions that it has, you know, for community members.
Yeah.
But that's where, you know, organizations, environmental organizations come in too. So hopefully we can, you know, make policy around where we have, you know, policies in place that really try to make jobs for renewable energy.
Yeah.
Right.
There you go.
Because it gives community hope.
That's the possibility, too, is that the jobs we might cut because of petrochemical, we might also be able to restore because of renewable energy.
Exactly.
So it's not a zero at the bottom of the page.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it brings that, it brings that hope, right? It brings that, you know, incentive, even though the coal mining plant closes, that doesn't mean that, like, jobs end.
Right.
Like, we can create. And that's where, you know, organizing and education, environmental organizations and advocacy comes in to really educate the community about other options. Because sometimes they just don't know other options, whether they've never left their area or been in another state or a place.
Mm-hmm. So you can bring that information to them.
Right.
That's really good, yeah. So as in your role as a leader then for the Indigenous community, How do you feel about your work as a woman and a leader in the Indigenous community?
That's a really good question. And I think, too, in, you know, Danann Indigenous culture, it's, you know, we're taught to be humble. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not, you know, to brag too much, you know, about yourself in that sense. And sometimes I have you know, I feel like sometimes I walk in two worlds. I can understand both.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard that phrase of walking in two different worlds.
I have.
Where you understand the non-Native culture, but you understand, you know, the Native culture. And so I feel really fortunate in the position I am in and the work that I'm doing, because I know that I can be a mentor and influence. I see myself as more to, I see leadership as being a mentor.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. You know, I've done work too with youth, and I find it really important and powerful working with youth too.
Yeah.
Because it's really, if you can show them mentorship, but then also show them that there's, you know, a future and lead them and guide them, I think that's, to me, that's really powerful. And to see a result, an actual result of what you've done,
for
the work that you've done, I think that's what's really powerful to me. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it in the work that I've done where I've influenced or I've had Indigenous, you know, youth or, you know, come up to me and say, oh, I did this because, you know, you led me or you guided, you know, you helped me.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most powerful thing. And so I really try to lead in, you know, a mindful way, but being humble in that sense, but then also really staying grounded and true to my roots and being, I believe in the power of authenticity,
yeah.
So being authentic.
Yeah.
I think what Nick takes also is a great leader, is really being authentic and true to yourself.
Well, I think that's a really great message. I'm wondering exactly where it came to you from your family, from someone in particular that you could think of?
Yeah, I would say my family. I come from a really, my family's, you know, I'm really close with them. And I've been really, you know, fortunate to have my parents been married 46 years this year.
That's great.
And, you know, my sister is a great role model. You know, both of my sister and my dad went off to college. And my dad was the first one in his family to go to college. And, you know, he came from a background of where his parents died early, you know, due to alcoholism and so forth. And it was an unfortunate circumstance. And, you know, he wanted the opposite.
He
and
really
so,
changed, and, the, you know, changed the whole story, didn't he?
You're right. He changed that story. And so I feel like, you know, just being around, you know, my family and then also seeing my family, the one, you know, the San Juan County that, you know, when I say they're, you know, impoverished, there's a lot of unemployment. I've seen that my whole life.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, I want to influence and I want to help, you know, I really want to help others succeed.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm glad to be in that position to do that. But then also, you know, to grow those to make change, right?
Yeah.
And policy and influence, like leadership and influence decision making. So, yeah, I feel that a lot of my background stems from, you know, my family.
Yeah.
My family are my roots.
The strong role models that you've had in your own family. I was wondering if there was any other things that you would like to make sure to communicate to the listeners today, Tyann, if there's anything more that we should know.
Environmental justice is a very important concept, especially for those communities that we're working with, you know, people of color. You know, environmental justice basically is the fair treatment and, you know, meaningful involvement of all people, you know, regardless of race, color, national origin, or income.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, the definition of, you know, the EPA. But we see that these environmental justices are pretty much injustices in communities of color.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really important to, like, sit with that concept and idea of environmental justice. And I know that's something as an organization within our program, that concept that, you know, we're working with and thinking about. But I think it's really important to think about that, too, when you're working with environmental work, because sometimes we just think about conservation,
right?
Of, you know, But then there's also that element of environmental justice. And I think that's something too important to sit with as well.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And it's something that we all need to consider. And I really want to thank you for being with us this afternoon and for sharing your story about your work and your background and helping us to reflect a bit on this environmental justice issue. Thank you for being with us, Tyann. And we'll be watching for the June 24th County Commission meeting and hoping that that Blue Ribbon Task Force will get started.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.